Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Mem Zayin. We will begin on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, the last words of the Amud, Zakai B'Metziyasa. The Mishnah that we learned yesterday described the various rights that a father has in his daughter, who's a Nara or Ketana, the various rights that a husband has with his wife. And one of the rights that the Mishnah identified a father has with his daughter is Zakai B'Metziyasa. What she finds belongs to him. Says the Gemara, why? Mishim Eva. Because to avoid a bad relationship between the father and the daughter. Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, what is the point of this takana? Rashi says, the father supports the daughter, as we've learned. If the father is supporting the daughter, and then when she finds something or wins the lottery, she says, no, this money is mine, I'm not giving to you, it'll cause a very bad relationship. So here I have to support her, and then when she has an opportunity that she has something, I don't get a share of it. That's why Chazal made this takana. Tosfos has a different approach. Tosfos' approach is, as we have learned and are going to continue learning in Mitzvah Shem, the father is given the right to marry her off. So he could pick any chosin that he wants. If when she has this mitzia, she doesn't share it with him, he'll say, you know what, I'll get back at you, and I'll get you a chassan who is a menuvel of mukashchin. So in order to avoid her ending up in that type of a terrible marriage, Chazal said, let's have a better relationship between daughter and father by him getting the mitzias. The next thing we learned in the Mishnah was Masi Yodeho, that the father is given her earnings. Ask the Gemara Menolam, from where do we know this? Says the Gemara, Domerav Huna Merav, Benayin Shemasa Habas La'av, how do we know what a girl earns goes to a father? Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, V'chayim kar ish espitoi la'oma, a father has a right to sell his daughter as a slave. Ma'oma Masi Yodeho Rabba, just like a slave, whatever she earns belongs to her master. Afbas masi yedelovia. So too, whatever the daughter earns goes to her father. Ask the Gemara, Vema, perhaps when will we say that the pasuk is saying this? Hani miliktana. It's referring to ktana. Since the matzim asmala, if he could sell her, he's certainly entitled to keep what she earns. Avanara, the loy matzim asmala. The halach is that once a girl is already a nara, her father can no longer sell her. So I would say, just like he can't sell her, similarly, masi yedahava, she could keep what she earns. So how do I know that what she earns goes to her father? Answers the Gemara, mistabra davihava. It only makes sense to say that a father has the right to get her earnings. Because the isakadatach, masi yedah lav davia, if you're going to suggest that her earnings do not go to her father, we know that the father has the right to marry off the daughter, as we discussed in the previous year. So the question is, how could he ever marry off? The halach is that the girl, when she gets married, Rashi says that at least the first day, we know it's really more than the first day, can't work on the first day of Sheva Brachas. So by her getting married, if she keeps her earnings and the father marries her off, how will he reconcile that financial loss, the day of work? So if we're going to say that the money goes to him anyway, so it's not a shaila, because it's his money that he's losing when she gets married and doesn't work that day. But if the money, the earnings go to her, how does he have a right to make her lose that money? And from here, the Poskim extrapolate a very simple vart. There's a chiv kibbut of aim. Every child has to do what is to respect the parent. If her father wants to get married and miss a day of work, so she has to do what her father says. So anyway, she can't go to work that day. So from here we see that the only chiyuv kibbut of the aim is when adult, under normal circumstances, is only one is obligated to respect his parents, but not when it costs him. So what the Gemara is saying is that she's obligated to listen to a parent, but she's not obligated to lose money at that expense. And if her earnings don't belong to her father, how will she be, why could a father marry her off? Says the Gemara, Parach Rav Acha. Rav Acha says, this is not a full-fledged proof that her earnings go to the father. Because we could say, the Yavleh Schapakasa will say that she keeps her earnings. I will say if she keeps her earnings, how does a father marry off? He'll pay her for the day of work that she missed. Inami, the Masla Balayla. He'll marry her off by night, where by night there's no, she doesn't work anyway, so she has nothing to lose by getting married. She has no financial loss. Inama, the Masla B'Shabsus V'Yom Tovim. That he married her off on Shabbos and Yontif when she doesn't work anyway. So if she doesn't work on Shabbos and Yontif anyway, there is no loss. And that's why we can reconcile that she keeps her earnings and her father still has the right to marry her off. Says the Gemara. Back to the, so we're still looking for a proof that the girl's earnings belong to her. Says the Gemara. Ketana lo tzricha kra. We quoted a pasuk at the beginning of this piece of Gemara. The pasuk of Vechi Yimkar Ishas Bita La'oma. As the Rishonim explained, there's actually a superfluous word in that pasuk. The word La'oma is extra. So, and that's what we said, that it's coming to teach us that someone is entitled, sometimes the father is entitled to earnings. By Ketana, we don't need that pasuk. Because the halach is, Hash the Zvuni Mazmelo, if the father has a right to sell her, there's certainly no question that he's allowed to keep her earnings. So we have this extra word, la'oma. It must be coming to teach us something. So even though the pasuk is talking about a ketana, but I don't need the word la'oma for ketana, so I say that the pasuk is coming to teach us the nara, that the earnings of a nara go to a father. There's a very interesting fundamental taisus here. Taisus says, the Gemara says, that there's no proof that from the fact that the father can marry off the daughter, that he's entitled to keep her earnings. Because maybe he married her off on Shabbos and Yontif, which she's not earning money anyway. Ask Taisvis, how could the Gemara suggest that the father married her off on Shabbos and Yontif? We learned the Gemara in Masechta Mayakotin, Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha, and a wedding can't take place on Shabbos and Yontif. So how could the Gemara suggest that we married her off on Shabbos or Yontif? So Taisus, in his first answer, says a very big chiddush. Taisus says that there are two stages to Shabbos. There's the time called Taisus Shabbos, the time before Shabbos, and there's the time on Shabbos already. And as Rabbi Chanan explains Taisus, on Shabbos, there's an issa to do malacha, and there's a chiyuv simcha, oinig on Shabbos, Simcha and Yontif. On the time of Taisvah Shabbos, Melacha may not be done, but there's no Chiv Simcha. So what's the reason we're not allowed to do a wedding on Shabbos Yontif? Ey Ma'arvin, Simcha B'Simcha. So she'll get married in the time of Taisvah Shabbos, where there is no Chiv Simcha, so she could get married in that time, but yet on the other hand, she's not working because there's Issa Melacha. In fact, the Mefarshim goes a step further to say that this Taisvus is the basis for a very interesting Shaila. The Shaila is as follows. People, especially in the summer, are very common make Shabbos early. And by the time they come home from shul and they finish their meal, it could still be before Tzeis Kuchavim. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Maral Prague that even if one makes Shabbos early, he should be careful at least to eat a kezayis of challah after Tzeis Kuchavim, after it's Shabbos. Why? Because of Taisvus. Because even if you have a right to be Makabel Taisvus Shabbos, but the Chi of Simcha, Taisvus taught us, is only on the time of Shabbos, which only begins after Tzeis Kuchavim. The Magen Avraham disagrees. He says you don't have to do it. It's more relevant on Yontif. Because on Yontif, there's a Chi of Simcha. And Simcha is on Yontif itself. In fact, that where's that Shiloh relevant? This is so much the minig in our world, but it used to be very common that weddings took place on Friday afternoon. Friday afternoon, you make a wedding. How could you make this suda on Shabbos? So the answer Moshe Shoinim give is because on Shabbos there's not a chiv to have simcha. On Shabbos there's a chiv to have oinig. So the simcha of the wedding doesn't contradict the Oynik Shabbos. But to make a wedding Erev Yontif and have the meal Yontif by night would not be mutter, because it's Eimer Avon Simcha B'Simcha. You have a Chiv Simchas Yontif, so you can't have a Simchas Chasna at the same time. And that's why the minig is that a wedding Suda is not made on the night of Yontif. Sheva Brachas, the minig is, can be made. This Shaila, also the Tosfos discusses, has other repercussions. Let's say a woman is supposed to make a Hefsek Tara on Friday night. And they already were makabel Shabbos. They made Shabbos early. And then she realizes, I have to make a Hefsek Tara. But is it already Shabbos? Is it already considered night, where it's too late to make the Hefsek Tara? I'm not here to pask in the Shaila. Bemis, it's a machlokus of the Ramah and the Shach. The Ramah seems to be machmer, that once they were makabel Shabbos, it's too late to make a Hefsek Tara. The Shach seems to disagree with Ramah, but even in the Shach, it's hard to understand what the Shach means. He quotes his father also. On one hand, it could seem to say that the Shach holds that if the shul, the community, was makabel Shabbos, in a place where the entire community follows one minig, even if she was makabel Shabbos, then the Shach may agree with Ramah, it's too late. On the other hand, it may seem that the Shach holds that even though the community was makabel Shabbos, but if she wasn't makabel Shabbos, then she could still make the Hefsek Tara, but the Shach would agree that if she was already makabel Shabbos, it would be too late. But this is the same Shaila. Tosfos gives another teretz. Tosfos says that she got married on Shabbos or Yontif without having a Suda. What's the reason you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos and Yontif? Because Eim Aaron Simcha B'Simcha. The Simcha is in the Suda. The Simcha is not in the marriage. That's what the Gemara means. The Mefarshim ask a number of interesting questions. One question that they ask is, the Gemara is suggesting that she should get married on Shabbos, because on Shabbos, she can't work anyway. So the Mefarshim ask, Rabbi Kveg asked this question, you could work on Shabbos. The Lama test Malachas and the Toldus, and whatever is also on Shabbos, but there are enough things that that a person could do on Shabbos and earn money for doing it, that you're allowed to do on Shabbos. So what's the Gemara saying? It's impossible for it to work, and there's nothing to lose. So the Rishash gives two answers to the question. One answer is a fairly simple question. He says, yeah, theoretically one can work on Shabbos with the Malachas and the Mutter. But most people don't work on Shabbos and earn money on Shabbos. And that's what the Gemara means, that she's not losing anything because she's not working then anyway. But the Rishash has another teretz, a very bechidish. He says, when our Gemara is having discussion, do the earnings belong to the father of a Nara? Do the earnings not belong to the father of the Nara? The Gemara is only referring to melachas that there is tircha for. It involves a lot of exertion. And what the Gemara is thinking, it makes a lot of sense, is here, she does the hard labor, and the father should get the earnings. But the Gemara always knew that just if a girl does an easy job, she didn't have to exert herself, that for sure the Gemara knew goes to the father. Even if you're allowed to do melach on Shabbos, you can't do difficult work. It's only easy work. That the Gemara always knew belongs to the father, and that's why that's Rikvega's kasha is not a kasha. Another question the Mefarshim ask, and the Mishnah Berurah uses this la'alocha, that why didn't the Gemara say that's referring to Rosh Hashanah? Why didn't Tosfos answer it's referring to Rosh Hashanah? What was Tosfos' kasha? How could a wedding take place on Shabbos or Yontif, Eimarv and Simcha B'Simcha? That's on Yontif, where there's a Chiv Simcha. But Rosh Hashanah, there's no Chiv Simcha, so a wedding could take place on Rosh Hashanah. And that's what the Gemara means. Why didn't Tosfos give that teretz? Says the Mishnah Berurah, from here we see that even in Rosh Hashanah, there's a Chiv Simcha. The Sefer Shail Sechuvah's Torah Lishma also uses this Gemara to teach us a very interesting halacha l'maisa. We know that the Gemara says that one is not allowed to receive money for teaching Torah. Ma'ani b'chinam, af atem b'chinam. Just like I taught Torah to Klai Yisrael for free, so too a Rebbe cannot teach Torah and receive remuneration. So how do Rabbonim and Rebbes get paid? It's Chabad Taylor. They could have been doing something else in that time, and instead that they taught Torah in that time, so that's why they're entitled to get paid. It says the Sefer Shal Tzuvah Torah Lishma, let's say somebody gives a shira by night. He wouldn't have worked at that time anyway. So he's not entitled to get paid. Because Al Gemara is saying that it's only, just like Al Gemara says at night, she could get married, there's no loss, because she's not working then anyway. Similarly, if somebody teaches Torah in a time where he anyway wouldn't have been working, so there's no concept of Schar B'Tehila. Two more points, interesting concept. One is our Gemara is telling us that she would have to not work on a day that she could work if her father marries off because of Sheva Brachas. The Paiskim discuss what is the halacha about working on Sheva Brachas. I'm not going to go into all the halachas, but I'm going to make an interesting observation. If we look in Shulchan Aruch Evin Ezer, the Shulchan Aruch says that a chassan during the Sheva Brachas is not allowed to work. And then the Ramah adds, the chassan is not allowed to work during Sheva Brachas. Now we're all familiar with what the Ramah does in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch was written by the Mechaba Beis Yosef. It represents his opinion. And the Ramah in his Haggah quotes something if he has a different opinion. Generally, the Mechaba represents the opinion of the Sfardim, and the Ramah represents the opinion of the Ashkenazim. But if the Ramah agrees with what the Mechaba holds, then he doesn't write anything. So the Mefarshim asks, why is the Ramah adding that a Chassan is not allowed to work during the Sheva Brachas? The Mechaba says the exact same thing. So the Mefarshim explain that there are two reasons why one is not allowed to work during Sheva Brachas. One is that the chassan has to be mesameich tekala during the Sheva Brachas. And if he's going to work, he's not being mesameich tekala. The other reason is because chassan doim lamelech. And just like a melech is not allowed to work, so too a chassan is not allowed to work. But there's a very big nafkamina la'aloch between those two reasons. If the reason is because he's supposed to be mesameich tekala, so if the tekala says, I forgive you, you can go to work. Or you could go to learn. So it's fine. But if the vart is chasm daim lamelech, melech shemachal kvaydei en kvaydei machal, melech's not allowed to work, then the halacha would be that even if the kala tells the chasm, with me it's fine, that you could go to work, it's still aser. That's pshat. The mechaber is saying, chasm shouldn't work, he should be busy with the kala. But according to the mechaber, if the kala says, it's fine with me that you should go to work, he'll be allowed to go to work. But according to the Ramah, he's adding he's a melech. So the kala can't tell him he could go to work. Also, as we finish learning this sugya, I always heard of a minig that I never understood until I learned this sugya. We know the minig is that on the day of a chasana, a chasana kala fast. I heard there's a minig that the father also fasts on the day of the chasana. And I never understood why until we learn our Gemara. The Mefarshim give two reasons for this minig that a chasan kala fast on the day of chasana. One is, it's like a Yom Kippur. The day of getting married is like the day of a Yom Kippur, Yom Mechilas Avinus. So we fast. The other reason is, because by a chasana, they're conducting a transaction. She's getting married, they're getting married. And if we're concerned that if you ate, you drank, you won't have a clear head. What is the nafkamina? The nafkamina is, again, in our world, this doesn't happen. But as we'll learn a lot in this Masechta, Erusin and Nisuin did not take place at the same time. They used to have Erusin, and typically there was between the Erusin and the Nisuin, there were 12 months by Ibsula. So the question is, what day did they fast? If we say the reason is because Mechilas Avinus, it was the day of Nisuin, that's when they're becoming a couple. If we say it's because of the transaction, so to speak, Erusin is really the transaction. We do Erusin and Nisuin together under the chuppah. But in their world, it was a nafkamina. We're learning in our sugyas, in the previous sugya and in today's sugya, that who really married off the girls? Her father. A ketana or a nara, her father married off. If we're saying that the reason for the fasting on the day of the chasana is that the person conducting this transaction should have a clear head, the father's really the one conducting the transaction. That's where the minute came that the father fasts on the day of the chasana. Continues the Gemara. That first in Dara, we learned in the Mishnah the father has right to be made from the Dara. Menolon, t'ksib benurea beisavia. When she's still a Nara, a father can be made from the Dara. On Mekabel Eskita, we learned that the father, if she becomes divorced from the Erusin, is the one that receives the get. Menolon, t'ksib yotzev ahoysa. The Torah compares ishkes yitzil avaya, getting the get to the Kedushin. And as we've been learning, the Kedushin the father receives, so too the get the father receives. But as we emphasize, that's only a get from Erusin. A get from the Suin goes to the girl. And as we also discussed yesterday, how do we view that get? Is it a get that's really going to the girl, just the father's receiving it on her behalf? Or is it a get that really belongs to the father? So he said some nafkaminas in the previous year. I'll say one more nafkamina I saw in the Paiskim. What would be the halacha? The halacha, the Gemara says, Masech the Gittin, is that if a woman is incapable of watching her get, then she can't get divorced. What would be the halacha if a girl is incapable of watching her get, but she's a ketana or a nara who's only on rusa, but her father is capable of watching the get? Is that get a valid get? If we say it's a din that the father is getting the get, so it doesn't make a difference what her status is. If the other end, it's a get that the girl is getting, just the Torah gave the father the right to accept it, so if the girl is incapable of watching the get is an invalid get. We learned further in the Mishnah, that if the girl inherits money from her mother's family, that money the father can't touch. Says the Brisa, Tana Rabbanan, have en ochel peres b'chayah b'itay. This money that this girl receives, the father doesn't get. Like the Mishnah taught it. Rabbi Yosef Rehudai ma'av ochel peres b'chayah b'itay. That the girl does get it. Ask the Gemara, for my kamithgi, what is the basis of this machlokes? Says the Gemara, Tanakam sover, the Tanakam holds, and as we're going to learn on the base, Bishlam about the kinel or rabbanan peri, Chazal said that the husband gets the peri, because there's a deal, there's a quid pro quo. He gets the payris, and for that, if she chas v'shom gets kidnapped, he has to ransom her. So that's why Chazal said that the husband should get the payris, because we won't give him the payris, im kemim nevelai parik. If she gets chas v'shom kidnapped, the husband will say, you know what, she could stay there. El av ma'ikalameima. By husband, what are you concerned? The mim nevelai parik, that the father is not going to ransom her? Every father is going to ransom his daughter, even if he didn't get her peris. Rav Yosef Yehuda Sava, Rav Yosef Yehuda disagrees. He says, Av nami mim nevloi parak. A father, it's hard to understand, will say, you know what? I'm not going to ransom her. He's going to say, Sava kis nekita leva. She has plenty of money in the bank. Tezel tifuknaf, she'll let her redeem herself. And that's why Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says that the father also should receive the payris to make sure that if chas v'shalom something like this comes up, he'll ransom her. Continues the Gemara, Nisus Yisrael of Baal Shuaychel. So as we learned in the Mishnah, the husband does get the payris. We're going to explain this Gemara the way Rashi explains it. Tanabon, Kosla payris ksus v'kelim. We know, as we just said a moment ago, that the marriage takes place in two steps. Erisin and Nisuin. So the father, as soon as she becomes an Arusa, writes a ksuba for the daughter, which is what we know as Nadin, what we know as Nichsei Tzom Barzel, giving her fruits and clothing and all sorts of different gifts. Shivoy imami beis avila beis bala, that he's giving to the husband, Nadin. Now, the question is, she dies, Rachman Litzlon, before the Nisuin. There was only Erisin. So the question is, is he entitled to keep these items? So as the Rishonim point out, there is no question in our Gemara that if the father explicitly wrote, it's not yours unless there's a Nisuin. Or vice versa. The father explicitly wrote, it's yours right away, then there's no Shaila. Our question is when this wasn't spoken about or written about in the Ksuba. So the daughter dies as an Arusa. Who gets to keep these items? The Pnei Yeshua goes a step further. He says, if we look at the Gemara, speaks about Peiris Ksus V'Kalim. He says, these are specific objects. But let's say the father wrote in cash. He said, I'm going to give you a certain amount of cash. That, he says, certainly doesn't belong to the husband until after Nisuin. There are Achronim to disagree with the Pnei Yeshua. But our question is regarding the Peiris Ksus V'Kalim, that the father and the husband did not explicitly discuss, is it his now, or is it only his by the Nisuin? And the girl, Rachman al-Tzlan, died before the Nisuin. So says the Tanakama, Lezoch Abal B'dvarim Halalu. Since they never came to the Nisuin, they never become the husbands. Rav Shimon Rav Nasan Amru, Zoch Abal B'dvarim Halalu, that he does receive them. Says the Gemara, Lema Plukta Rav Elazar Rav Zari V'Rabbanan Kamithki. The Gemara wants to suggest that this Machloikis is the same Machloikis as Rav Elazar Rav Zari and Rabbanan. The Tanan, we're going to learn in Daf Nun Dalet. This Amalon Nisgarsha, as we said, as soon as a girl becomes an Arusa, she is an Eishes Ish, and she's entitled to a Ksuba. So, says the Tanakama, this Amalon Nisgarsha Bein As we've been learning, just like the father writes things into the ksuba, the husband could add to the ksuba past the mono or messiah. So the Tanakhama says, the Rabbanon hold, that if the husband wrote in more than the mono messiah into the ksuba, and they never had nisuin, and the marriage terminates, the girl collects the entire ksuba. If they had an nisuin and then the marriage terminated, then she gets everything that the ksuba says. However, if they only had erusin and then the marriage terminated, then she only gets the basic ksuba. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah suggests that the only reason he gave her extra is that they're going to have an nisuin. But if they're never going to have an nisuin, it was never his intention to give extra. So Taisus asks a gewaldige kasha. Taisus says, we've turned over the entire business world. Taisus, what does he say? I write something, but then I say I didn't mean it. And the deal is off. So Taisus asks, I guess it was in their world, we could relate to it in our world. Taisus, let's say somebody buys a cow. And the next day, the cow dies. So could you go back to the buyer and say, no, I never intended to buy the cow, that it should die the next day. I buy a car, and the next day I don't like it, I go back, I don't like it. You can't do business that way. So what's pshat in this Gemara? So Taisus answers that when somebody buys something, it's understood that I may not be happy with my purchase. I may buy something, and then after a day, or after a week, maybe after an hour, I'll say, you know, I made a big mistake. But that's how it is. You have to live with your mistakes. Marriage is not a regular business deal. A person writes a ksuba for his wife, he intends to marry her. Otherwise, he would have never written her this ksuba. Another pshat that I saw in answering Taisus' question is the case that Taisus refers to, where is the problem? The problem is on the item that I bought. I bought this cow, and then I regret buying the cow. The cow died. The cow isn't what I expected it to be. Here, the problem isn't with the item. The problem is with the people. That the buyer and the seller didn't come to the right terms, and that's why the concept of Shloim Nas L'Kansai is maybe an illegitimate concept. In fact, I saw that Shabina Rav uses this concept. There was a shaila that was asked to him. Interesting shaila. There was a couple that got married, and the chassan said he's going to be learning in Kailul. And the father of the kallah said, fine, I'll support you for 5 years. And then he saw that he wasn't successful in his learning, so he went to work. But he says, you promised 5 years support. And the father says, yeah, I said I'll support you if you'll go to the yeshiva to learn. If you have a job, I'm not going to support you. Is this concept shloi kosov law? I only wrote it to you because there was a certain understanding. How far do we apply that concept? Says the Gemara, back to this machlokes. The mandam that says that the chassan who wrote to the kal, that the chassan doesn't receive everything that it says in the ksuba if they never came to Nisuan, hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Or manda, or mezacha, holds like Rabbanan. Whatever it says, it says. Says the Gemara, it's not, the mechlokes is not necessarily related. Loi, the kul amik Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Everybody could agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Manda, or mezacha. The mandam says that he doesn't get it. Well, holds like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Just like she doesn't get the whole ksuba unless there was an nisuin, so too does he not get the gifts unless there was an nisuin. Or manda, or mezacha. However, the mandam says that the chassan gets everything that's written into the ksuba, even though the marriage never came to this nisuin state, because perhaps at kan lo kamer Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was referring el miday al dido, what the chassan is writing for the kala. Shlei kosov lo, he only wrote it to her el amanas l'kansai, with the understanding that they're going to have nisuin. If they're not going to have nisuin, he never intended to give it to her. Ava miday al dido. What the kala or the kala's father writes for the chassan, perhaps afilu Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah maidi. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is maskim the mishumich tunihu. The reason the father gives the gifts to the chassan because he's so happy that he got this boy as a potential son-in-law. And they had erusin, and even though the marriage never came to nisuin, he still gets everything that's written in. And in fact, the Rishonim say that this concept of Ichtuni is so far, we take it so far, because the Rishonim say, where was the Kinyan here? They didn't have Nesuin. They say the Chibus Erisin, the fact that this Chosin agreed to get married, is such a strong feeling that that accomplishes a Kinyan. But there's a fascinating Taisus here. Taisus says, even though the Gemara has this Shaila, again, in our world it's not that relevant, but it's interesting to follow, that the Chosin isn't entitled to everything that it says in the Ksuba, the Nadin, unless there it was the only Erisin in the Suin, says Taisus, quotes Rabbeinu Tam, that even if the couple got married, and even if they had Nesuin, if Chas V'Sholem, the girl, dies within the first year of marriage, and they didn't have any children, the Chosin has to return to the Kala's father, the Natan, the dowry. And in fact, I saw that the women Hagim that say not only the first year, Taisus the Rabbeinu Tam talks about the first year, but I saw there a Menhagim that said even the second year, if the Kala died within the second year, again without any children, he has to return half the Natan. So I saw the Mefarshim say, I never heard this before, fascinating. We know Rabbeinu Tam, that's the Rishon, Taisus quotes all the time. Where did he get the name Tam? Rabbeinu Tam. Tam is not a regular name that we find. So the Rishonim, so the Mefarshim explain, it says in Toichacha, V'tam l'rik toichachem, a klala, that a person will work and will go for nothing. Rabbeinu Tam was worried about that klala, that here the father gives the chassan a nadin, and it ends up being for nothing because the girl never dies. So to avoid that klala of a tam l'rik toichachem, Rabbeinu Tam made a rule that the money goes back to the father. That's how he got the name Rabbeinu Tam. Continues the Gemara. Chai b'mezunasah, we learned in the Mishnah that the husband has to support the wife. Tana Rabbanan, tiknu mezunasah tachas masu yadeha. Chazal made up that he has to support her and she has to give him her earnings. And the Rishonim discuss here, b'mezunasah to Gemara, we're going to learn a machlokes between Rav and Rish Lakish. How do we view this rule? Is it that the husband is supposed to support the wife, but in order to make it somewhat fair, Chazal said that she should turn her earnings over to him? Or does it work the other way? The husband is really entitled to the wife's earnings, but to make it somewhat fair, we said that the husband should give to support his wife. What's the nafkamina between the two pshatim? Very simple nafkamina. What will be the halacha if a woman says to her husband, you know what, she has a good job, don't support me, and I won't give you my wages? Could she say it? If the takana is on her behalf, that she should get supported, so she has a right to say that. If, on the other hand, it's on his behalf, then she can't say that. However, says Taisus, even if it's on his behalf, everybody agrees, says Taisvis, that a husband can't say to his wife, you know what, I'll let you keep your wages and I won't support you. That everybody will agree a husband can't do. The only according to Rav, a wife could say to the husband, I won't give you my wages and you don't have to support me. And there's a Gaval de Gavart from the Imri Emes on this concept. Imri Emes said over this Svart to Reb Aaron Kotler and Reb Elchanan Wasserman at the Knesset Gedolah. He said there's a very difficult Rashi to understand. The Pasuk says, V'yivoya ha-noshim al ha-noshim, that the women were quicker and more eager to contribute to the Mishkan than the men. So the question is, how could they contribute? Kamashakan se'isha kanabala. Everything that a wife earns belongs to her husband. So she can't give the money away. So how could they contribute? So he answered, we just learned that a wife has a right to say to her husband, I don't need you to support me, and I won't give you my wages. In the Midbar, the wives didn't need their husbands to support them. They all had mon. So the wives were able to tell their husbands, we don't need you to support us, and we want to keep our wages. So if they kept their wages, now it's theirs, and they could go and donate it to the Mishkan. Says the Gemara. Furthermore, says the Baisa, V'kvuras tachas ksubasa, Chazal masakin, that he gets the ksuba. And again, the Rishonim explained, the Gemara doesn't mean here the mona masayim. or the Gemara means what we've been discussing. In the Ksuba is written the dowry that the girl's father gives to the chassan, and it's written, and the deal is that he will get all of that. When she dies, it becomes his, he inherits her, but for that he has to bury her. And the Rishonim say, on this part there can't be any deals, that she'll say, don't inherit me and don't bury me. They have to each follow their obligation. Continues the Brayis, l'fik of Baal Oichel Peiris. That's why the Baal is allowed to eat Peiris. Ask the Gemara, Peiris man d'chashmayu. Who mentioned Peiris? That we're talking about Peiris. Says the Gemara, chsuri mechsev ha'katani. This is how we have to understand the Brayis. Tekinu mezonaseh tachma seyedah, as we just explained. He supports her, she gives him her wages. Pekuna tachas Peiris, as we said on Amar Aleph. The Peiris, if she gets a field, he gets to eat the Peiris, but for that he has to ransom her. The Klerasa, tachas Ksubasa, and if she dies, he buries her, but for that he inherits everything she brought into the marriage. Lefikach Balach Peiris. Now we understand how Peiris gets into the Mishnah. Says to my lefikach, but we still don't understand why did the Braisa have to single out Peiris again? Answers the Gemara, and chunin and chinu. Maybe we should say, and this is the way Tosfos explains it. Machlokes Tosfos from Ritzvah, how to understand this Gemara. That even though we're saying that the husband is entitled to the Peiris, what the Gemara means to say is that not that he could eat the Peiris as soon as they become realized. That he has the right to eat the Peiris, as Tosfos explains, if the need arises, he could eat the Peiris. But not that automatically, under all conditions, can he eat the Peiris. The Ritzvah explains that the Gemara says, maybe not that he could eat the Peiris, maybe what the halacha should be is that he should take those Peiris, invest them, and buy real estate, and he can live off the real estate. Says the Gemara, that won't work. Dim kein, nimna v'lei parak. We're concerned that if that mahalich is followed, she may end up not getting ransomed. Kamash from the Hadifa. This mahalich, that as soon as the payers are realized, he eats them, is the best on her behalf. Because zimna de loimola, or parakla medei de dei. He said like this. If the payers, especially the way Tosfos explains, are kept on the side, so he knows how much money is the bank. So let's say she has $10,000 of Peiris in the bank. And now she's chas v'sham kidnapped. So and they want $100,000 ransom. So he sits down and makes a calculation. This isn't worth it. I get $10,000 and I have to pay $100. However, if as the Peiris come in, he just eats them, so he doesn't really have a cheshbon of what he ate. So when the situation of a ransom comes up, he just gives, because he knows that's the deal. He keeps the Peiris, and she gets ransomed. So the Rishonim ask a question. What's going to be the halacha? Could a wife and a husband make a deal regarding this, just like they make by wages? We said that at least according to Sutna Amaron, by wages and support, the wife and husband can make a deal. I won't give you my wages and you don't have to support me. What will be the halacha regarding Peiris and ransom? Could they make a deal, you don't take the Peiris, and you don't have to ransom me? So the Rishonim say they can't make such an arrangement. And they give a number of reasons. They explain, number one, because the woman may decide that she doesn't mind being kidnapped and remaining there. But we don't want it to remain between the goyim. Another reason is, we don't want it to remain because she's supposed to be with her husband. She's not supposed to be kidnapped somewhere. So that's why that arrangement doesn't work. Another pshat that I saw is as follows. This deal about a husband and a wife with the wages and the support, they can make a different decision every year. This year, they could decide we'll be separate on the fiscal. Next year, we'll be together. But on the Peiris and the Bekuna, it's a one-time deal for life. And that's why Chazal said that deal cannot be negotiated. Ask the Gemara Epechana. We've been saying that the wages and support and the Peiris and the ransom travel together. Perhaps the wages go together with ransom, and the Peiris go with support. Says the Gemara, Am Abai, tik the matzu, le matzu, v'sheina matzu, v'sheina matzu. That a wife earns wages is very common. That she needs support is also certainly very common. That a wife earns, that she inherits Peiris is uncommon. And that she's kidnapped, Baruch Hashem, is also uncommon, so that's why they're connected that way.
And the Rishonim point out, certainly Ksuba and Kvura, which both take place after death, certainly are connected and should be connected in the Takara. Amar Rava, says Rava, Hai Tana, the following Tana we're going to learn, holds Mezoinus Deraisa. The Chiv for a husband to support a wife is Mederaisa. The Tanya, the Pasuk says, Shera Ksusa Vainosa Layigra, that the husband has to give Shera Ksusa Vainosa. Shera, what does Shera mean? Elu Mezoinus. It means support, food. The Kena Omer, the Pasuk says in Micha, Vesha Ochlu Sha'ami. There the Pasuk says that they Goyim have bothered Klal Yisrael to the degree that they squeezed out their bones. They ate up their bones. So that's Pshat Mezoinus. Ksusa, what does Ksusa mean? Kameshma, clothing. Einasa, Zua Einamur B'Tayra. The husband is obligated to have relations with his wife. V'kenu Oimer, Lavan said to Yaakov, Imtanes B'noisai. And the way Tysus explains, is what Yaakov was, what Lavan was telling Yaakov, I'm demanding that you have to have relations with my daughters, and the, as a husband is supposed to have relations with his wife. If not, it's called inui. It's called that you're bothering them, you're paining them for no reason. So so the Mefarshim point out, we're used to understanding oina means relations because there's oina means time. That they're supposed to have relations at the appointed time. Here we're understanding the oina comes from the Lashon inui. That if a wife is deprived, it's inui, she's being pained for no reason. Rabbi Lazar, I mean, he agrees these three things, but he learns it from he has different definitions of the words. Sheru zu oina. Sheru refers to relation. V'kenu oim ish ish and called sher b'sayra le'sikavu legalis erva. So it turns about a wife is called sheroi. Ksusu k'mashma means clothing. Einasa elu mezoinus. That refers to the mezoinus. V'kenu oim v'yancha v'yarivecha. V'lez ben Yaakov oimer. V'lez says, he says that the entire pasuk is referring to clothing. Shera, the pasuk ksusa means clothing. When the Torah used the word shera, means lefim shera ten ksusa. According to her status, give her a clothing. Very simple. Older women and younger women wear different clothing. And what the Torah is telling them is, give clothing according to what is her befitting to her. Rashi says that older women would wear narrow, tighter fitting clothing, younger women would wear wider clothing. Everybody has to get according to what they're appropriate. V'einasa, lefum einasa ten ksusa. Give a clothing according to the season of the year. Shlayitein chadoshim imaisa chama, v'lashchakim imaisa gshamim. So the way Rashi explained it is as follows. They didn't get new clothing for the winter and the summer. But the way it worked was that the clothing, the material had a weight to it. So they got new clothing in the winter, when it's colder, and the clothing is heavier. And then as the year goes on, the clothing gets worn out, they're lighter. So in the summer, when it's hot, they have lighter clothing. So what the Pasuk is saying is, give it a lighter clothing, don't give it a heavy clothing in the summer, and the light clothing in the winter. So according to Elazar ben Yaakov, Tysus points out, the entire Pasuk of Sheru Ksusa V'Einasa is referring to clothing. And Sheru and Einasa are explaining the ksusa, explaining the clothing. Ask Tysus, what will Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov hold regarding mezoinus? And what will Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov hold regarding oina, having relations? So Tysus says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is certainly going to hold that there's a chiv deraisa for a husband to support his wife and to have relations. He says, of the three items that we're discussing, clothing is the least important. You get new clothing, you don't get new clothing. But you can't live without mezoinus. You can't live without food. And a husband, and a woman gets married to a husband in order that you should have relations. So if the pasuk is saying that a husband is obligated to give ksusoi, to give clothing to his wife, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will certainly hold that a husband, midoraisa, is obligated to give his wife also mezoinus and oina.